welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. My name is Adam Cook. I'm your host. I'm here, as always, with Christopher White.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm all right. It's getting worse, isn't it, mate? I'm not really trying.
It's fine.
To be honest, I forgot about our little thing until I was mid-name, and it's gone now. And I don't know. I think we'll have to draw a line under it. Like, this just can't continue. Chris, yeah. you're all right, mate. You're okay?
I am good, yes. I'm a little sleepy, little hungover. I don't normally have a beverage in the evenings anymore. But there's a reason for it, and we'll talk about it very soon.
Okay, that's... Yes, that tease those listeners. Also with us this week is Nicola Ardron. How are you, Nick? All right?
I'm all right. I'm a little bit tender as well, to be honest. A little bit tender. But wow. I'm all right. I've got a cup of tea, and I'm ready to go. Talk about games.
Tea.
All the games.
The hangover cure that is tea.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a busy week. There's lots to talk about. But we're going to start, actually, by kind of doing a little bit of old and a little bit of new. Because, Chris, you've listened to me talk long and hard about PSVR and VR in general, as have all of our listeners. You have now finally had a good old chunk of VR fun.
I'm trying to
think of sort of a smutty pun innuendo, but I can't. It is early, and I'm not tender, but I can't quite get there. You have got a PSVR there and have been playing some games, and we thought... What a great thing to do. Let's talk about some PSVR.
Yeah, well, I had a friend round last night, and someone at work had lent me PSVR, which was very, very kind of them. Thank you, James. I got every PSVR game off the PlayStation thingy to get.
Store. It's called a store.
Store, yeah.
you are tender.
Jesus. To kind of get a good range of what's to offer. Now, I wanted to play Resi 7. I've got it. However, it's very kind of obviously single player experience, and with everyone else there, it's a bit unfair.
So
we cracked on with PSVR Worlds. That was where we started. So we had a bit of Danger Ball, which is basically Pong, isn't it? But in like
I
VR.
Can't actually even remember PS Worlds properly because that was a launch game. I think it's the one where there's lots of different things.
Yeah,
is it the one where there's like you're in a weird? I can't even describe. Now, I haven't been drinking. That's the thing.
Yeah,
it's like you grab the ball to go to each world or something.
I don't know. The Danger Ball is basically you in this arena and you've got like a square in front of you and you replace your positions on the other side and it's basically Pong. He'll hit the ball to you. You've got to hit it to you by moving your head left and right. And it, like, for the first kind of experience, I was quite impressed, but obviously it feels very much like a demo, like a teaser to the
whole
introduction.
There are lots of this kind of game.
Yeah.
Like that's why I'm confused because there's like 10 of these on Steam.
But the kind of one that we wanted to try is my best mate knows that I have quite a phobia of open water. And on PSVR Worlds, there is one where you're in a cage underwater. And obviously, we did the shark encounter one because that's going to terrify me the most. And when I was playing... No, this is just the one on PSVR Worlds.
Or not.
You're in cage and it starts off pretty standard. You're underwater, you're looking around, and it is like massively impressive. Like for a first go on PSVR.
Yeah.
You're just looking around and there's like turtles swimming around and fish, and then you get lowered, which is where the panic starts to set in, and there's like the like manta rays swimming around, and then you get to like this abandoned submarine, this nuclear submarine, and there's this some like short little story that's tethered it all together, which I didn't really pay attention to because I was too much shit myself when I saw this shadow in the background of a bloody great white shark, and it obviously swims around you. And then, of course, it just decides to attack your cage and it rips the panel off. And it's like, it's really impressive how much detail there is in this shark because when it bites onto this, like, camera and you can see right down its throat and it's just ripping it to pieces and its dead black eyes are just staring at you. And it was tough. And my mate videoed it, which I want to try and get to use in some kind of feature or something, but I'm like... I watched it afterwards. I'm just shaking and like I'm ducking, and I'm.
Really?
I know it's not real, but I think it doesn't help by the fact that it terrifies me normally. But I was very impressed with that. So I had a bit of a bash on that. I did a bit of London Heist just for the to use the Move controllers. Oh, mate.
What about the accents
spot
in that game?
What are you fucking eyeballing at? What are you fucking car?
Oh, you slay.
Yeah.
You so fucking mad. Yeah. the way all English people speak, obviously.
That sounds like me playing the Siege when I'm playing the SAS.
Might be. Yeah.
Boy, fucking fuck them up,
but it is the way, as we all know, way all English people do speak all the time.
Well, yes, obviously.
Well, it's either that or the other accent, which is come to you, darling,
obviously, it's the introduction to it all, isn't it, where, you know, you get to see how the move controllers work, where you can pick up guns and stuff like that.
I have to ask this because I did this and it's still even, this is one of my memories of the sort of pre-release review period of that thing. You're in a chair, aren't you? And there's a big sort of, whoa, what are you fucking doing? He's got his mobile out and he's going to do you in, but he gets a call on his mobile. I kept like with my hands, the wands, I kept sort of like trying to stroke his face. Did you do any of this? Because I think he does react, if I remember correctly.
I tried to poke him in the eyes because he gets up really close.
Oh, yes.
And he's like, he's proper like, I even move my head forward to like proper eyeball him out. he's quite intimidating.
He's a big guy.
Yeah, he is. But that did happen. You're looking around the room and then you look at him, he's like, oh, stop fucking eyeballing me.
It's actually one of the best worst, I suppose, the most playable things because those accents are... I mean, listen, I know people who do speak that way. It's not inaccurate, but it's also kind of caricature silly, isn't it?
Yeah, and it is just like a nice little introduction if you want to just see the mechanics working. I'm trying to think what else I did. I did, because obviously I said my friends were around, I didn't get to play a lot of it, but I started the Impatient.
Ooh.
And I didn't get very far, but I did get some jump scares in there. So one thing that I did kind of wonder what it was going to be like is the fact that you can, obviously some games you teleport from place to, it's a documentary, but you're in the documentary. Which is it's really fascinating. But with the Impatient, you do move around. And it is quite easy to kind of do that, where you press the middle button on the left move controller to move forward. And then you kind of use the right one for your diagonally movements and to turn back. But because one of the main things I was worried about was the motion sickness and that kind of thing. Like, now, with the Impatient, it didn't really affect me. But when you like at the very start, you're being pushed around in a wheelchair, aren't you?
Oh, that's right.
By the psych ward guy, and he wheels you around, and it's very weird, like being moved and looking around. I mean,
it's car sickness essentially. It's looking out a window and seeing the world move while your brain is saying, "But I'm not moving. I'm stats." It's car sickness essentially. Yeah. Motion sickness, isn't it?
Yeah, but I didn't struggle too much. Okay. But when you kind of you've got over those little intros where you're all spoken to in your room and you have to get used to the controls, like the mini tutorial, and then you end up like in this ward where it's all kind of got a shade of green, and this thing, fucking hell,
it just
jumps at you.
I shat myself in that moment.
I pretty much did. I absolutely shit myself because you're just not expecting it at that specific point. You still think you're kind of in this little intro bit. And then there's a fucking deer appears at the end of the hall. And then there's a guy stood next to him waffling on like in some weird demonic voice. Mm. And I was like, maybe I should just leave this for now because I don't want to show myself up in front of my wife and my best
again.
Friend. So I gave it a little break. But I've got things I've got like Thumper ready to try. I mean, obviously, we played that and loved it on standard PS4, but I want to see what that's like in VR. I tried like the Spider-Man thing just for a bit of fun, but it lasts for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, there's a lot of that on the store. A lot of sort of free little. Yeah. Oh, these are 5 minute demos things. Yeah.
Yeah, but just like first impressions, I'm very impressed. I think the real kind of test is going to be when more games start coming out, which are longer and you know make more use of the VR, but for now, like there are a lot of experiences, there are very few full games on there, but I'm looking forward to get cracking on Resident Evil 7 because I kind of want to do that from the beginning and see how I get on. obviously I don't think I'll get on very well because I remember what happens in it. So I'm going to be waiting for him about 4 or 5 hours on it last night. We all kind of did that underwater one together, like separately, like one after the other, just to kind of show it off. And yeah, it's very impressive. I've got the Arkham one as well. I want to try that because I want to be Batman, you know.
Yeah, that was genuinely good. I really enjoyed that. That's one of the early sort of standouts of PSVR, I think.
So I've got that. I'm going to crack on it and we'll talk about it maybe on the pod next week. But for now, it's really good. I'm really glad I've kind of got to experience it.
Well, I do want to mention, I won't stick on this so long because we've done quite a bit on PSVR already, but Moss is a game that's just come out on PSVR, and we've got a review going up soon. It's actually one of the more recent standout games for PSVR. Right? You play a mouse called Quill. Well, no, it is a mouse. It's kind of a fantastical world, but so I wonder if there's more to it. But it does seem like it is just a mouse with a sword. And it's, do you remember Super Lucky's Tale when it originally came out? It was an Oculus Rift game. And your head is the camera, and you're kind of looking in on these dioramas. It's a platform game, but your head is the camera, which means that each platform, well, not level, each scene is a kind of diorama, as if you're looking in on it, like an isometric. And you control Quill the mouse with your left stick, and obviously then the camera control is your head. And a lot of it is basically like you're moving this mouse around doing platforming and rudimentary combat stuff. And you can also use the controller to move things that glow blue. And it actually does a good job right away of saying, calling you the watcher. You can see your reflection in the water. You're like this, I don't really know, I've sort of seen this character before, but I don't know what they're called. They're like apparitions that are like wearing almost like hockey masks, but not hockey masks. And it's really good. The only problem I've had with it is that, like a lot of games designed like this, it doesn't seem like it gets some of the depth right. So, for example, it wants you to look, you're looking in on it, but it also wants you to reach down and pull things up. And if you're sat down, which this is a game, I think, designed to be sat down and played because it's a platform game, there's no reason you would stand up. It's not a move wand game. It's a controller game. Like, you have to reach down, and it's like, I can't reach lower than myself. I'm sat on a sofa. And I found this a lot with PSVR games, that they sort of want you to reach down, and I can't do that because I'm sat down. Like, I can't reach through the sofa. And with the PSVR, I don't know if you've noticed a lot of drifting effects. Like, the tracking is not the best. I've said this before. You will get, and that's one of the things that can make you sick, is you get a lot of movement. And because, like, you know, it's just the PlayStation camera is the problem, essentially. There's nothing wrong with the hardware that you buy with the PSVR. The camera is an old bit of tech, whereas all the other devices use, like, specific, here is your motion detector, here is your, sensor bar, whatever. They're separate things. They're not just, old tech. So apart from that, I think Moss is a really good game, but I don't think that's a problem with the game. It's nice to see these games starting to come out. That this is apparently the studio's first effort. And I think if you're into VR and you've got a PSVR, it's a no-brainer. This is a delightful game. Just a really nice platform game. I'd be interested to get your impressions of that, because I've tried going through the setup multiple times with PSVR, like finding, there's a thing you can do where you can literally look at the camera and then you can put little crosses where your eyes are to work out the distance your eyes are apart. There's a lot in there. I just always feel like it's fine until it wants me to reach down, and then I don't know what it expects of me, you know? Because I can't put the controller down by my right-hand side or in front of me because my legs are there or the sofa's there, you know?
It took a while for me to get the distance in right and stuff like that. And when you think you've cracked it, you're playing one of the games and you kind of look, like when you look, when the, I ask you to look down as well, you look down and then the screen kind of fades to black because you've not got the right.
It's
a bit tricky getting that right. And obviously, if you're playing with people with different heights and if you're sitting down or whatever, you keep having to adjust everything. But yeah, it's a bit tricky for that. But when, as you're saying about reaching, moving your hands around and stuff, I found that tricky sitting down playing London Heist because you kind of have to be a T-Rex if you're playing like with the camera relatively close, because your hands have to be close to your body to be able to pick everything up. It's not quite spot on yet, but I'm hoping it kind of doesn't.
See the way the other devices get around this is, so like with HTC Vive, you have two sensors and you put them diagonally, so one in the one corner of the room and one in the opposite corner. So whichever way you turn, there's something picking up some part of what you're wearing to signify you're still in the world. So you should never blink in and out like that. And Oculus Rift does the same. You have two sensors in front of you, but you can get a third and put it behind you. So again, it's 360 tracking. The PS camera is just one thing. It's an interesting thing. I wondered if they... I mean, it seems to be doing quite well for them by all accounts, PSVR, so I don't know that they would... I mean, I must admit, it annoyed me that they made a hardware revision, because one of the issues with the original thing is that the pass-through box, the little breakout box you have, doesn't pass through HDR, and it always frustrated me that you released the PSVR and the PS4 Pro, and one of the selling points of the Pro is the 4K HDR, and then if you add PSVR to it, you can't have HDR without changing cables, because it then in the new box does pass that through. So it's like, well, it's like it, I think I said on the podcast at the time, how did nobody twig this? It genuinely seems like somebody didn't, and then they did, and then they've, you know, it doesn't matter. Long story. We've talked about old and new in PSVR and MOS. One's not old but older, and one's brand new in MOS. That leads us beautifully onto something that is both old and new at the same time, because Yakuza Kiwami is a game we have discussed before. It's the remake of the first Yakuza game, but Nicola hadn't played it, but she has now. I guess she picked it up in the sale. It's like a tenner, isn't it?
I did. I got it for, what was it, 12 quid?
Yeah, that's a... I mean, well, I'm nervous. Pounds. I'm nervous about your impressions, because I love this game.
Oh, there's a sigh.
I don't know what to make of it at the moment. I don't know what to make of it at the moment, right? So let me weave you a little story here.
Sure.
So Gary said that he'd nearly picked up Yakuza Kiwami that day in store or something.
Okay.
He said he'd seen it for like 17 quid or something. I can't remember.
Yep.
And he said, it was really good that I didn't, because I've now seen it on the PSN store in the sale for 12 quid. And I was like, ooh,
that's a good price.
That's probably about the price that I'll, you know, give it a go. So I went onto the PSN store, right? And you know how it does like a little trailer kind of thing for what the game is? And I was sat looking at it going, oh God, this looks good. Looks like some real like dark, grimy, you know, sort of crime drama thing. And I was like, okay, yeah. So I bought it, and then I've spent like, I haven't got very far in it, I'll just say that. I haven't got very far. So your man, who I've forgotten his name,
Kazuma Kiryu,
that's it, he has been to jail. So he's been in prison for 10 years, and he's literally just come out of prison. And he's found out that the guy that he went to prison for is now like the patriarch of the family.
Mishki,
Sorry, I can't. I mean, I've literally
just getting
my head around these names. At the
absolutely,
right?
Fine.
So your man's grown his luscious hair back. He's come out of prison. He's got his suit back on, and he's wandering around the streets of Tokyo. I'm assuming it is, and.
Yeah.
That fella, your man with the patch, eye patch, keeps popping up.
Yep.
Keeps popping up, like, inopportune moments. Like, you're a bit like, not now! What's his name from Pink Panther? So I have to fight him to, like, regain my dragon power or whatever. And I've gone to a funeral of somebody who's been found dead after a big family meeting or something, after 1 million yen has been stolen. So that's where I am at with it. There's quite a lot of exposition in there. There's a lot of cutscenes, and there's a lot of chatting, and then there's a lot of like walking around, not really knowing where I'm going.
Right.
And then there's a person who like I have to fight. So I'm a bit confused at the moment. But I was initially a bit lukewarm, because when you first start, you go to a club, don't you? The Serena Club.
Yeah.
And there's a big discussion about one of the girls' birthdays, and you go out and buy a ring. And then as soon as you come out of the jeweler's, the ring gets stolen by a pickpocket. And then you're wandering around trying to find the pickpocket. And then he tells you he's pawned it at the pawn shop. So you go to the pawn shop, you haven't got enough money. And it's just like, so I was a bit like, is this a bit dull?
It's a bit old in its design, which it is, I guess.
So I thought it was a bit, I wasn't overly grabbed by it at the beginning, but it's picking up now.
Yeah.
The chap who keeps popping up to fight me amuses me.
Goro Majima is, it's hard to say you should have played Zero before it, but I think if you like him, you might prefer... Because I think I prefer... Chris, I don't know what you think. I think I prefer Yakuza Zero because...
Yeah, it's more.
There's more Majima. Yeah. Like there's like in Yakuza Zero, which is obviously the prequel. Nick, you right. actually. Whereas in this game, you're playing as Kiryu. In Yakuza mm-hmm. Zero, you split your time playing as him and Majima, the character you're fighting, and it explains Majima. So as he appears to you now, which is to say, an absolute nutter. He isn't that in Zero. That's finding out his backstory, which is I think why people love Zero so much, because Majima is such a beloved character. But right. I kind of feel like he is, as much as I love, you know, Yakuza's one, Kiwami, whatever you want to call it,
yeah.
I do still feel like Majima is just, every time he pops up, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Like I said, yep. It reminds me of the Black Panther character. I've forgotten his name. Is it Kato?
Pink Panther, but
No. He has that manservant, Inspector.
No, you said the in Black Panther, and I don't think Pink Panther.
Yeah, Pink Panther.
I mean,
Panther,
listen,
sorry,
I might go and see Black Panther if there's this sort of shenanigans in it. Like that's no,
it's
but yeah,
Black
in,
Panther's
yeah, Kato.
Like in the cultural zeitgeist at the moment, isn't it?
Good God, you know what? You're right. It is. It's Kato and Pink Panther, isn't it? You're playing Pink Panther and Magic
is
Kato.
What's it like?
You're absolutely right.
That is what it's like, and I laugh every time he pops up because it's like it's proper like not now.
And you have to beat
not
the shit
now,
out of
Kato,
him. No,
I'm busy. Yeah.
You're spot on. It's absolutely Pink Panther and Kato.
So I've started playing that. Like I said, I'm very early days in it at the moment,
and it
is picking up. It is picking up now that he's out of prison. It is picking up, and I'm getting a bit like the fighting. Initially, I was a bit confused by all the fighting because you can change different styles, can't you?
I was a bit confused
mixing up between those, but I'm getting the hang of that now. Sort of like trying to understand when best to use like the brawler or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'll keep plugging away at it. It's like not grabbed me 100% just yet.
That's fair.
So we'll see. It looks great, but you're right. It does feel old.
It's a bit old
in the way that it plays.
I mean, it is an old game with a lick of paint, essentially. Yeah. You know, it is, and I think. Because like in Yakuza Zero, you've got the three fighting styles, but also then Majima's got three of his own fighting styles. So there's even more to wrap your head around. But stick with it and let us know how you get on. Because
thing I have noticed is all of the characters have enormous hands. What is that about?
Well, that's
why
Sega.
Do they have enormous? Even the ladies. Like I was laughing my head off when Kiryu gives the ring to the. The woman, I've forgotten her name as well, and like she puts it on her like massive shovel hand. I'm just like, what? Because you know she's all delicate and you know beautiful Japanese looking lady,
yeah,
all like you know really delicate looking, and then she's just got this massive shovel hand.
Yep.
Just like, what is that about? Why?
Well,
do they all have huge hands, Adam?
It's just a very Sega thing. So it's always been Sega's. Like I'm thinking of like all the games Sega ever made with people in, like real people, and they've always sort of got. I mean, not all of them, but a lot of them. I do feel it's that kind of over the top. I don't know. I can't really explain it. I'm not even going to try, Nick. To be honest with you, it's just weird. No,
it just struck me.
Glad you're playing it. I'm glad you're not like, oh, this is shit. You know, because I can understand why people would think that. Like, because it is an old game. It is, and people. I suppose
it's
to be fair,
it's a slow start. It's a very, very slow start.
Yeah,
and I think that if I didn't know that lots of people love this series, I'd be like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you get through that first? But do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With the ring, it's like.
I mean, I would say, and this won't spoil anything unless you are absolutely like, oh, I'm going to play Yakuza Zero as well, and then you know, but I would say it's actually worth. Going on YouTube and looking up Yakuza Zero's Majima intro, Chris, you know what I mean? The cabaret club.
Oh, man.
Like, that is a long cutscene, but, like, that is one thing I think distilled to why I love this series. Like, that is just just magic. And even I think it's Zero again, where Kiryu, you fight the guy. Who's the guy you fight multiple times? He wears glasses.
What's his name?
We're not going to get his name, but when he comes at you down the in the sort of Now I'm losing words. You know, you go out the back door of the pub and you're in like the sort of sewers, and he comes at you and he's riding a motorbike, shirtless, with a pipe that he's dragging along the walls, and he's like, "Kiryu!" And it's just like, it's Metal Gear basically, but Yakuza. Yeah. Okay. I've been playing Into the Breach, which is a game we'll probably talk about next week with Gary as well. But I just want to very quickly say, Into the Breach is the follow up to FTL.
Yes.
And oh my word, I think it's better. I think it's better than FTL.
Really?
And FTL is a much loved game. It's a strategy game. It's a turn based strategy game. And I don't know that the podcast is the ideal place to get into why it's so good, because it's so much of it that is better explained by showing. You know what I mean? There's like,
yeah.
There are, I mean, the one thing I love about this is that you feel, it's hard, by the way. Like, I had to start again on easy, and then I got to the last boss and fucking made a mistake that I shouldn't have made, and that's it, game over. But, like, there's so much to this game in terms of the tactics. Like, each of your units can do a certain move, but this game is about movement. So you've got, like, a unit that can attack, but it can also shunt people out of the way. So you this game, what it does best is it shows you everything. So at the start of your turn, you will know where enemy A is going to attack on his turn, because they've already preloaded it. You know, like you would in the strategy game, it treats them as a human player almost, like it's almost like chess. Like, it shows you, this thing is going to attack this energy, right? You have three units and there are four enemies. How are you going to do this? So the core idea is to not let your energy get depleted, because if they kill all the power stuff, game over. You've no power. You will look at it and you will go, right, I could kill this enemy, but this enemy is only going to attack my unit, whereas that enemy is going to attack the building. So if I shoot my mortar attack and land it next to me, it will shunt this enemy one square along, and therefore when it does its attack, it will attack empty space. Or even better than that, if you really get, you know, you will spend a lot of your time just looking at the board for your turn, going, right, how can I maximize my output? And you will end in situations, and it is the most glorious feeling, where you shunt one enemy that was going to attack a building one square along, then you shunt another enemy who was going to attack one of your units into the opposite square. Now those enemies are going to attack each other because their attack is preloaded. And it is glorious. You can change a defensive situation where you're going to, like, if you don't do it right, you're going to lose. You can change that into a situation where not only are you winning, you actually get them to kill each other. There are elements where each turns, other enemies burrow up from underground. They're called the Vec. They're like this. They're spiders, they're ants, they're all these, you know, typical, nothing particularly amazing about the enemy types. But there's a tell, it will show you, like, there's a crumbling on the floor, so you know, like, right, that enemy's going to come. And if you go up to this little icon, it's got turn order, it tells you, the first thing that happened will be environmental attacks. So if there's a volcano that's going to go off, it shows you where they're going to go. That's the first thing that's going to happen on that turn. You can knock enemies into them, so the volcano takes them out. Or an earthquake takes them out. Or sometimes an earthquake just disappears and takes the floor from under them. They're gone. You know, then it will show you like a number two. Number two is, say, the spider. He's going next. So you know that if you knock number three into number two's path of attack, number two is going to go first. He will attack number three. Do you know what I mean? So you can... It's, again, not maybe the best place to discuss it. But do you guys get what I mean? Like, you can really meticulously plan out a strategy to stop these things. You know, you take one damage if you block an enemy trying to come up, but you can also knock one of the current enemies onto that block to stop their own enemy coming up, and they will take one damage. This is before we get into the fact that each of your three units has a pilot, and those pilots give a stat buff because they get XP per kill, per, you know, all sorts of stuff. They can die and then your AI, you know, AI takes over, but you lose those buffs. You can get power cells that upgrade your units. I worry that people are listening going, God, what? Huh? What? Like, it's so much to this game, but I just cannot stress enough how incredible this game is. Like, it's a masterpiece already, I feel like. I don't know, maybe I'll drop off of it, but I hope this game comes to every platform, because it's incredible. Like, it's, I say, I think it's better than FTL. And FTL was...
I love, you know, FTL. I've got FTL on my iPad, and it's
exactly
one that when I'm out and about and I'm a bit, you know, if yep I'm waiting for something, I'll just fire it up and have a go. I'm absolutely shocking at it. No, I haven't yeah got anywhere near the end on FTL. Terrible.
I mean, the thing is this... I think this will come to iPad. It has to. It's the same sort of game. You know, it's that kind of, again, it's an isometric view. Well, no, FTL isn't it? It's a top down. But this yeah is like, you see a board, you can see the grid. It's literally mouse clicks. It would make so much sense to come to iPad. It would be perfect for iPad in that respect. It would just, in the same way FTL was, like, it's just a literal translation from mouse and, you know, it's touch, you know, mouse is touch, isn't it? I am blown away by how good this game is. Like, not just because I can't stop thinking about it, but because every time I play it, there's like a new element that I'm like, wow, this feels magical. Like, whereas FTL, like, there's a lot of random number generation going on. This has that because you can't predict, you know, although you can see what they're going to do, you can't predict what they're going to do after that. It just makes you feel so good. It just, I don't know, I can't really put it into words. It's just one of those things that when it all ticks off, like I say, when I died on the last boss, I was so cross at myself because I had misunderstood. I thought I could take a bit more damage and I had just forgotten to look at my bar at the top that showed how much energy I had. And it's like, you stupid idiot. You know, there for example, you can start a whole turn again, but you can only do that once per level, once per map. You know, you can move your unit and then see if you can attack people, but then and like, there are new weapons you can get, and you can upgrade your health and movement abilities. There's all these things. It's such a beautifully designed tactical sort of RTS, I guess. I cannot recommend it enough. Like, I think if you go to Good Old Games as well, I think if you buy it on PC there, you get FTL, is it Enhanced Edition or something like that? You get that with it. And it's like, it's just, that's some bargain, that is.
So, but I've never played FTL. I've never even heard of it. I feel kind of bad for that. So is it on PC at the minute?
Yes, it is.
And iPad, yeah.
Right.
Oh, what? FTL? FTL is on PC, iPad.
And Into the Breach is just on PC at the minute.
Yeah, it's just come out, and that's just PC at the moment. I don't know if they've announced platforms, cool, but no, I would be genuinely stunned.
Yeah, I'm quite keen to play. You know. It sounds really good. Sounds right up my street.
I mean, if people aren't sure, I've put a really poor live stream up on youtube.com/GodsAgeek. I was testing out Game DVR on PC, so the audio isn't right, and for some reason, the audio when using Game DVR is bad. But it will give you an indication of what the game is. There's an hour of me playing it. You know, you can hear me. It's not the best quality, but I wanted to show the game off. I know Gary's playing it and loves it as well. It is hard, but it's one of those, like, I played through on easy, and I say I got to the last boss, and then after that, I felt like, hang on, I think I'm ready to go back to normal now. And again, you get your ass handed to you, but there are, like, if once you finish an island, which is, say, like 4 or 5 levels, you can then, you get these little star points that you can then cash in, and you can actually just use them to buy energy, buy upgrade points, buy weapons. So there's, again, even that has an element of, you have to decide, what am I going to do here? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, oh God, it's probably the second best game I've played this year after Celeste. And even then, it's they're so different, it feels a bit disingenuous to even say which is better, because they are so, they're diametrically opposed. I guess I think I just like hard games, I think.
Yeah.
Really? I mean,
is that a humble brag, Adam? Is that a humble brag?
Well, no, I never said I was good at them. I just like
hard games.
Yeah, I do. You know what? I'm gonna give a shout out now. I know it's a bit early at the time we're recording. It's just come out, but Danny O'Dwyer's just published. You know, he used to do The Point on GameSpot. He's doing his own. It's very similar to that. He won't mind me saying, I don't think, but it's for obviously his own thing, Noclip, and he's just done one on first person shooters. And I hate the fact, I don't like, want people to think I'm constantly going on about him, but I really like his work. I think we all do. I know Nicholas, you know him, and you're a fan of what he does, and like, it's about first person shooters, and it's something I think we on this podcast would certainly agree with, that he said that I'm not going to do this any justice, so go watch the video on Noclip. It's a good 15 minute video, but the sort of synopsis, if you will, is that he loves shooters, but he's fallen off of shooters because he feels like there's a bit too much mud in the water of the shooter. Like, the games that are speaking to him are PUBG. They're games that require you to that treat shooters like logic puzzles, almost. Like, you have to, you know, he talks about how you have to kind of, like, you're approaching someone, and rather than just running in guns blazing, you have to think about, what have they got? How can I react? Mm. And you mentioned Siege as a game.
Siege,
similar.
I was going to say, that fits, yep, that is exactly it. Perfectly.
There's another game. Oh, Doom is another one he mentions, because, again, every bit of Doom feels like a combat puzzle.
Yeah.
Like, and again, like, although I'm not as big a fan of PUBG as he is and other people are, I would throw in games like Overwatch, similar. You know, you have to react and counter pick and pick, you know. And also, a game he didn't mention and I think would have been a good shout is Titanfall 2. And I think there's definitely an element of all these other games. And he says it himself, there's nothing wrong with Destiny 2. There's nothing wrong with that kind of game. But he loves, and I'm the same, I love these games that take the shooter and turn them back into that old school kind of puzzle. And I feel that's what, like, Into the Breach is doing. It's a hard game because it requires you to genuinely stop, and you may not be actively participating because you're just clicking around and looking at something and going, right, that's going to do that. And you really have to sit there and think about it. And I think that's what I'm a fan of. I think I'm a fan of games that require you to put a bit more thought into. Not that I don't play other games, because, you know, I play a sports game where it's just like, score a goal. And again, that's not fair, because there's more to it, you know, than that. But do you know what I mean? I think that's why this game speaks to me, because it really requires you to sit there and go, I have to work this out or it's game over. Not, have another chance. No, game over. In the same way that PUBG, if you fuck it up, gone. You're dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of which, Metal Gear Survive. This, I reckon, is going to be the last week we talk about this. Chris, have you played much more?
I've played the wormhole bit and the bit after that with the nurse.
Okay.
Oh, hello.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to touch on this game because I've obviously played more of it, a lot more of it actually now. I think at some point something happened, because I do think there's a really good game buried underneath this. Now, I was hoping, the reason I wanted to talk about this is I was hoping you guys would be able to, you know, we all know games, we're all old enough, we've played a lot of games. I was hoping maybe one of you two would be able to come up with a solution to this. So the problem I have with this game, right? Yep. With a game that is always online, you can't just save anywhere, and that's obvious because it's always online, right?
Yeah.
So like PUBG, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to save there. That's not the way that game works.
No.
With Metal Gear Survive, it's a single player game. So, you leave your base.
I thought it was built for co-op.
No. I did as well, and I think it would be a so much better game if it was co-op. There's a co-op mode.
I thought that was what the game was. It was built specifically for co-op.
Nope. If only it was. No, the co-op mode is like you go to a staging area and do the missions from the single player. Not those actual missions, but those style. So like a.
But it's a persistent world, isn't it? What you do in your single player will carry through to the co-op and vice versa?
No. What you have in your single player, you take into co-op. So co-op is a separate... There are, you know, you go off into a staging area with the materials and equipment you have from the single player, and when you return from the co-op, if you've used 20 bullets, you have 20 bullets less. But the only effect...
Oh.
Yes, exactly. The only effect you have then on your single player is that the resources you get from doing well in that mission, you do have... It's weird that's a whole other thing, like that's a weird element. However, so let me just paint you a very quick example. Like you leave your base and you go out knowing you've got to get to point A, that's the mission. On the way you find other stuff, you find loads of blueprints for weapons, you're excited, you've got loads and loads of Kuban, which is the currency that lets you upgrade your character, and you get to the mission, you fail it, you die, that's you done. You're back. When it says, do you wish to, you know, load your save, which is the only option sometimes, you say yes, it loads you back to the moment you left the base. Right. Now, I understand if it were a persistent world, if it were an online game, that's fair enough because you'd have people gaming the system and that isn't the way it should work. But it's a single-player game and I don't understand why... The reason I died is I got all my stuff and I started off a countdown timer. I don't understand why there aren't, like, some kind of autosave points, like, so you can, if you want to, you return to your save, or you can return to the checkpoint, which is we'll keep everything you had up until that point, but you still have to then go back to that point, and you can either then just go all the way back to your base and go, right, I ain't doing that again, I'll bank this, then go back, or you can try that bit again. I don't understand quite why it's so harsh.
No.
It happened to me twice the last time I played, and I lost 40 minutes to an hour each time. And I think that's a bit much. And it's on me. Like, I shouldn't have taken the mission on. And the second, you know, what I tend to do after this happens is you just, right, okay, I've got all this stuff. I know where I've got to go. Run back, bank it all, run back the other way. But you've got to remember in all this as well, you've got health and stamina and everything. It's all counting down all the time. And it's like, I feel like somewhere, the only thing I can think is that because the game's got microtransactions, they figured that people would be able to game it. And I don't, I've not, it doesn't interest me to do that. I just want to play the game because I think there's a fun game here. I think I'm done. I think I'm done because I feel like someone on the development team, or maybe it came from higher up, put this in, whatever, I don't know, I'll never know. I feel like someone somewhere said do this, and that's the breaking point for me, that I'm like, I'm having so much fun, and then I die and I lose everything. And it's not a new thing. I'm used to permadeath. You know, Dark Souls does it. You lose all your souls. You know what I mean? Into the Breach does it. You die, you're finished. It doesn't feel like a core part of the game. It doesn't feel like it needs that.
It sounds like when I played the beta.
Yeah.
And I got an idea very quickly that it wasn't going to be a game that I was going to like very much. Purely because it just felt overly grindy for me. It's like everything degrades and you've got to manage a hunger bar, a thirst bar and all this, that and the other. And I was just like, this is just too much. I don't mind stuff degrading. I don't mind hunger. I can't bear thirst. That just does my nut in. I just thought all of these combined together, and you've got to craft bullets, so you could very well not have any bullets for stuff, and then your gun breaks. It's just like, oh, no, not for me. And it sounds like the fact that they've put all of these like elements into it, and then you also lose everything, feels like a step too far for me from what you're describing. I'd be just like,
That's exactly what it is. Like, you know, you get to the point where you've got like a couple of potato farms, you got what do you call them, you know, like rainwater collectors, so you've always got water at your base, you've now got the elements you need to turn it into clean water, you know, and you've constantly, but the thing is, even those are on timers. Like, you can harvest your three potatoes in, I think it's like 120 real world minutes, by the way, real world minutes.
What?
Yeah. Or, you know, you'll have rainwater in 2 hours, you know, and then again,
that sounds like it's got a free to play kind of thing in it.
Absolutely.
You can speed it up by buying, you know, using real cash money to speed it up.
Not yet. I wouldn't be surprised if in a year it is free to play. You've nailed it. That's the realization that dawns on you eventually. This game has the trappings of every free to play thing you can imagine, and it's only £25. It is a budget price, but it unfortunately is the detriment of the overall product. Like, it's not unheard of for a survival. You know, most survival games, it's like, well, if you die, you've lost everything, but I feel like this just has a little bit too much grinding. I don't know what you think, Chris.
I've not got to the point where I've lost everything, but it is frustrating. The hunger and thirst goes down too fast for me. I think if there was a hunger and thirst, if there's going to be a hunger and thirst element in a game, it shouldn't go down so fast. Like, it happens in The Long Dark when you play that, you're like constantly like out of everything, and that's a proper survival game. And I think Metal Gear, I think we're so used to it being like without all this, and it's a single player game with a story that you've always kind of just played through, and you've used health or whatever at certain points, but now that this is into it, it just feels like it just takes away every element of fun to it, especially when you get further in and you're struggling a lot more with it because you're away from the base a lot longer, and it's there's too many systems that don't work for this kind of game, and the fact that the co-op isn't straight up co-op like Monster Hunter. Like, if that was the point where...
Well, let's aim a little bit higher.
Yeah, I was going to say, Monster Hunter.
I know what you mean, but yeah, maybe...
So like, if you had... Like, you could call on some wannie mates to drop in and help you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That'd be a lot better, but it isn't. It's just you on your own, and you're dealing with all these things, and it stops the flow of the game. You can't just go from mission to mission and just play through the game. You have to keep going back to the base or going out to hunt, and it all because it's also kind of fast, and it kind of goes down a lot faster. If you get attacked, you lose a lot of your hunger or your health or whatever, and it's just, I don't know.
You can get mobbed way too quickly and way too easily.
Yeah, like, it's not a great
and you're
balance.
Dead. And there are pills. You can carry pills that you, like revive you, but they're finite. You know, I don't know how many of them you get. I can't remember. It's. Do you know what it did make me do, Chris? It made me download Metal Gear Solid 5. Because for all the people saying, "Oh, it's not a Metal Gear game. It's not a Metal Gear game," it certainly feels mechanically like Metal Gear Solid 5. And that was a. I'm going to go. I might if I get the time, because it's really kind of made me want. That just again, I don't think Survive is a bad game. I just think it could have been a lot better.
Yeah, agreed.
But I tell you what's a brilliant game, Overwatch. Who have you know, Nicola? You've been playing Overwatch again. I have as well, actually.
Yes, I am. Right, so I fired it up, and not well. It was actually the announcement of Bridget that got me to fire it back up. But Bridget isn't on. Like PS4 yet.
No, I think she's on,
just
the PTR.
On the PTR, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, yeah.
However, Moira is a new hero for me, so I was having a bit of fun playing with Moira.
She's quite
now,
good, yeah.
She is good. She's got this kind of heal and debuff thing, similar to Zenyatta, and as you know, Zen is my boy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like her. Now, she... Right, she reminds me, I've been playing a bit of Paladins as well on Xbox. And you know this whole thing about when Paladins launched, Overwatch was like, oh my god, I can't believe you copied all the heroes from Overwatch. Well, Moira looks, she doesn't look like actually, but she plays like a character that is one of my faves on Paladin,
okay.
So that
all
made
right.
me chuckle. And then I've seen, obviously they've announced Bridget, and I saw that tweet from one of the Paladin's guys going, would
which is a, I don't know where to sort of sit on that, because like, I think if I'm them, I maybe just keep quiet, you know?
Yeah, I did find it funny, because...
Oh, it's definitely good, yeah.
I know the character that he put up as a picture, and I've not played with her actually on Paladins because I tend to play support anyway, but it did make me laugh because I was like, my god, yes, even the character model looks the same. At least with Moira, the Moira character model looks nothing like the one on Paladins, who I can't remember her name. I'm terrible with names, I don't know if this is coming through. But she does play like that character. She even has that sort of dash thing where she disappears briefly and teleport. That's the word.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Teleport. She even has that and the buff and the debuff. It's, you know, the actual hero abilities are very similar between Moira. And I think her name's Sarah, maybe?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Like I never actually played... Paladins, never did.
Do you know what? It's not bad.
No, my kids were playing it first, but then I got them Overwatch because I felt like they needed the upgrade.
Yeah, no, it's quite good fun. And it's got some fun modes in it, actually. A lot more different modes to Overwatch. It is good fun. I mean, it's not as polished as Overwatch.
No.
But I dip into it now and again. It is quite good fun.
I tell you what, you're going to enjoy Brigitte. Is it Bridget or Brigitte? I don't
really
know.
Well, it's probably Brigitte, isn't
it's
it?
Probably,
but we
it's
just go Bridget.
Team.
Bridget.
Well, I have played her, as have my kids. We downloaded the PTR. Well, we updated the PTR. I like her an awful lot. I like, as a support fan, I like her an awful lot. She seems like a... I bet they'll... I mean, they've already nerfed one of the accidental things that she could do, like a super jump. They've nerfed that already. But she's a lot of fun. She's got elements from a lot of characters that are... So I don't really play as Roadhog. I've never really got on with Roadhog. I understand like my youngest is a monster with Roadhog, but you know like his hook ability. So Brigitte has got the opposite. So rather than pulling people in, she can use her thing to boop people away.
Okay.
Oh my god! So even in the training ring again, I'm past it. Like my kids are showing me this stuff, and I'm like, oh yeah. So there's like in the training room, there's like a robot that's near an edge. So like you can boop it off the edge. So you know how you would like with Farrah's concussion blast. You can knock people. If the one with I've forgotten the name of the maps. I'm so out of practice. You can. Hit them behind to knock them into the well in that map, and there's
Ilios, you know that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And there's another one where you can. Well, I mean, you can do it with Lucio as well. Boot people off. But she's great because, like, you can just throw this hook at them. But rather than Roadhog and drag them in, you just boop them off. And it's like, oh, this is going to be some fun. You know, she's got, like, a shield, not like Reinhardt's. It's just, like, it covers her. She's got so many passive,
like Orisa's,
you know.
Shield.
Yes, yeah. But she can do, like, a shield bash. So you can hold the shield and then, like, kind of Reinhardt charge, but like a mini version.
That sounds like the character from Paladins.
Yeah, I bet. But she's also got like I can't remember the ability, what it's called, but once you've done it, just standing near people will, you know, her ult just is a big healing ring, and
right.
If you can hit people, she's so much fun. I hope they don't muck with her too much, because I do think she's a great beginner character, and I also think that they'll probably a couple of months in go, we need to tone her down a little bit, because she seems very useful. Like, she seems to me like a character that's, because of, it's a bit kind of, what's the phrase, you know, jack of all trades, master of none.
Mm-hmm.
She seems a bit like that. Like, she's got a lot of different abilities that give her a lot of use case opportunities,
right. Mm-hmm.
But she's probably not the best healer, she's probably not the best anything, but she's very all round. I like her a
so
lot.
You probably need another healer. You'd probably need a core healer if somebody picked her,
maybe. Yeah,
the team composition would probably still need a core healer. It's like when I was still playing, I noticed that if I picked Zenny,
yeah.
Invariably somebody else would have another heel character, like Lucio or
yeah, because he used
Mercy.
To be so weak, didn't he? He was good, but he was weak, and then they buffed him,
though,
didn't they?
Zenny. Zenny's a
he
beast.
He is now, yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, she's a tank support essentially. So, it's difficult to, because the thing is with the PTR, you might get the occasional match where people are picking all sorts of characters. But generally, you get sort of four people picking Brigitte on each team, and they maybe one something else and one something else. You know, generally, so it's difficult to really gauge the meta, if you will, because everyone, it's like, it's almost six on, you know, it's like I say, you'll get a minimum of four in each match. It'd be interesting. Is it me, or are they rolling out characters a lot quicker than they used to?
I don't think they are. I think
just
it's
not
just
playing
because
it
we're not playing it as regularly. It just seems that they're... Because I was just sat here thinking, oh, well, so Orisa's reasonably new, and then Doomfist.
Yep.
I haven't played much of Doomfist.
Yep.
Moira, obviously, I went on and was like, ooh, Moira. See, I like Orisa. I actually like playing
my boys
as Orisa,
play her.
But I still think that she's very squishy. Unless you've got like a Mercy constantly healing you. Because she's so slow moving, you get a tracer running around you. It's really difficult to stay alive long enough. But yeah, I mean, every time I play Overwatch, I'm like, oh, it's a really nice game.
Why don't
I
play
really
more
like
of this?
It. Why don't you play this more? And then I end up like playing Monster Hunter or Back on Siege.
I mean, it broke me, and I fell off hard when they changed Mercy's ult. Well, when they changed Mercy, because she was my main, and I still am to use.
Are
you
still in a huff?
Yeah, I am, because I genuinely think her ult was fine. Like, I know a lot of people disagree, but I felt like the amount of times you would get a full team res didn't happen that often. Like, and you had to work for it. It was almost, I don't know, I really feel like Mercy was one of the few characters that was fine. You know, I know a lot of people obviously felt differently because they wouldn't change it if nobody agreed, but it also annoys me now. I don't think you can get her achievements, because that's one thing I sort of ask the kids, because they play a lot of Overwatch. Like, when they change things like that, there's another character they did it with as well. When they change her ult, if you haven't got that achievement for like the full res, you presumably just can't get it. It's just
this is an interesting question, because I know on the Xbox, when they do the events, like the Christmas one that had the snowball event, that has a set of achievements attached to it. Now, it doesn't on PlayStation, but I noticed on Xbox. But when that event goes, you've got a set of achievements there that you just can't get.
Yep.
You just cannot get them. And I don't understand why...
Is Symmetra the other one? Did they change
Symmetra?
They
did change
Symmetra,
but Symmetra was you had to get... trap somebody with seven of her little thingies, turrets, and then you also have to have six people come through your teleporter or something. I can't remember exactly. But I got Symmetra. So I don't think anything they've done to change Symmetra.
I'm sure there's another character. I can't think what it is. There's another character that you can't now
they
get.
They nerfed
sure
Tilbion's turret, so getting the kills.
Maybe it was that.
That it's you not, needed with Torbjörn was a lot harder.
Yeah, but not impossible. But the Mercy one must be now impossible. And that's one that was shipped with the game. Like, that is not. Like, yes. I know what you're saying about adding the seasonal stuff, but that is like. Well, I don't know. Listen, let's stick with Xbox and talk about some news then. Because Microsoft have announced the spring Xbox update, which will bring some Mixer improvements. I've been using Mixer recently, and I know people like to shit on everything Microsoft does, but
it's
I have
good.
To say, Mixer's fantastic. Like,
it's really good.
It's incredible. Like, I left my son playing PC Overwatch, and I set it up on my Mixer account, and I went in the other room and loaded it up, and it's incredible how they've done. They call it FTL. I guess it's faster than light technology as well. They call it sub-second latency. Like, it's almost like an echo in the room if you're in the same room. It's so hugely impressive. I would say that is very good because you know, if you're playing a game that you want audience interaction with, Mixer, it's like people can just, they're watching almost instantaneously. That is amazing. Speaking of though, Mixer, so Mixer streamers will now have the option of sharing their controller with a Mixer viewer who is watching through Mixer.com. Streamers can share their entire controller except the Xbox button and the Xbox game they are playing, and a viewer can take control through the on-screen gamepad by plugging in a controller into their PC. Viewer and streamer can work together in the game, or the viewer can cause trouble. It's your choice. So this is kind of share play to the next level, because it means you can actually do it via a stream. That's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah. Bit crazy.
It's mad. They've also the new video support. This is less exciting, but the Xbox X and S support 1440p, which is kind of like not quite. Yeah. They call it QHD. PC users use it a lot. And also, they're apparently more. So more immersive audio, they say. You have the option to selectively balance game audio against background music within the guide. That's not all. The system has sounds on home and in the guide have now been revamped to support spatial audio. So the audio cues from your surround system will match the actions you see on screen. It's you know, there's more new invite tools for clubs. There's more, but that's the bulk of it. You know, are we impressed with Microsoft, what they're doing here?
I think it's a big step up, yeah. I think I mean, I've never used Mixer myself, but I'm inclined to, because I think that share play thing's quite a good idea. So I might give it a bash.
I think for me, I've used Mixer, but for me, it's more about the fact that, like, if I stream something on Twitch, I'll invariably get a couple of people watching, but on Mixer, I get nothing. So I'm
right.
like,
yeah.
But I think that may be just a case of people. You know, you've got to build up. Not that I've got a massive audience. I'm talking I've got a huge audience. Like, it's massive. I have two viewers. I don't know. It kind of feels a bit like it needs some more people to kind of get on it, if you know what I mean. Whereas Twitch is like already got the traction, hasn't it? So
I think the interesting thing about Mixer I keep forgetting is that, like, so my youngest was in the room playing Overwatch on the Xbox One X, okay? Literally, where I'm sat, he was to my left. I left John, where I was sat right now, playing Overwatch PC. It was literally, Overwatch was on every bloody screen. And when you stream via Mixer, because it's all integrated with Xbox, it comes up to your friends on Xbox saying, Ad Cook is now streaming or is broadcasting, and they can then watch that stream via their Xbox. And that's an interesting feature that I think they need to be shouting more about. But sticking with Xbox.
But it does that. It notifies your friends if you Twitch stream as well, though, or it used to. I know
maybe
Mixer
it does,
has taken
yeah.
over. I know Mixer I has taken over. It's a lot harder to actually go, oh, I want to stream on Twitch now. You have to do a few more button presses because the default now is Mixer, isn't it? But I do remember that it would send you a little notification saying, XYZ is streaming on Twitch. So it's always done that.
Well, streaming on Twitch or streaming anywhere, there's some. Yeah. I find this absolutely fascinating, and I honestly don't know what's in it for Microsoft, but obviously we know they do backwards compatibility. Mm-hmm. Not only do they keep announcing new games that are coming to that, obviously, They are making them Xbox One X enhanced, so the latest run of these is Forza Horizon, Fable Anniversary, The Witcher 2, and Crackdown. I find this just insane. Like, they are taking an Xbox 360 game and enhancing it for the X, and they did this with Skate 3, where they actually, obviously, they don't own The Witcher, but they're not. You would understand it maybe with the first party games like Crackdown, but they are taking third party games, doing the work themselves to make them. You know, Halo 3 was another. I just don't know what's in this for them. It's insane to me.
How do they look?
I haven't tested them. I still haven't tested. I mean, I saw Skate 3, sorry, and it does look better. But I've just downloaded Crackdown because any excuse, quite honestly. I just find it so strange that they're doing this. Like, do we imagine it's not much work for them? Because why?
You'd have to assume that it isn't.
I mean, I'm not complaining.
Because, as you say, why bother? Yeah, I mean, if it's like, you know, hundreds of man hours to do. If it's just a case of doing a little tweak here and there and they can do it, why not?
I suppose. I guess why not? But I just find it... I wonder... I don't know. It's just such a weird thing to me. Like, they're taking these games that are 6-7 years old, maybe older.
Crackdown was a bloody launch game, wasn't it?
It was, I mean, it's a bloody long time ago.
Pretty much.
It's an old game. I mean, I don't know. I'm wondering if it runs smoother, because it's a bit rose-tinted glasses. You think, oh, that game is amazing, but when you run it again, it's like, oh, it's a bit framey. I'm actually interested to see how that looks. More Xbox news, though. Because Game Pass, we've talked about it. We've said how cool it is. So, and in fact, one of these has already happened because I saw it in there the other day. Because I do subscribe to Game Pass because I think it's fantastic. It's just a great idea. So we know that Sea of Thieves is out this March, and we know that Sea of Thieves is going to be an Xbox Game Pass game on day and date with March.
Yeah.
They're also bringing this month Rise of the Tomb Raider, which I think actually is definitely already in there. In fact, I think the other ones are already in there now. Rise of the Tomb Raider, Sea of Thieves, Oxenfree, Resident Evil Revelations 2, The Final Stations, Sonic CD, I think I said that already, Eurofishing, and Super Lucky's Tale, which is a game that is not even a year old. You know, wow, it's £8 a month.
It's a great service. Like, it's not like they've got average titles on there. Like, bar these ones that have announced, there's loads. There's the Bioshock trilogy on there, your Borderlands. There's tons. And I said to you in chat, this Golden Axe collection, which just blew my mind because I loved Golden Axe on the Mega Drive. and there's loads. So, I mean, when I've got a bit of downtime, I want to do that Bioshock. We don't want to do kind of like a Bioshock dual stream, don't we? Because I've never really played it. So,
what?
Well, I have.
Yeah, I know.
I have kind of dabbled, but I've not really.
You've played Infinite.
Yeah, I've played
the worst one.
Oh, no, it's not.
Ooh.
It's not. It's the best one. But then I haven't played
Masterful
the first one.
Masterful trolling. So. And you, hook, line, and sinker. I believe
no, no,
it's
no.
A...
But no,
it
for £8 a month, it's amazing.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
I mean, I would say to anyone, I think if you haven't done it already, I think your first month of Game Pass can be $3.99.
Wow. Well, there is actually a deal. Now, I don't know if it's my account specific because my live is due to run out. In fact, it isn't due to run out because I took another deal on. But they were offering me... 12 months Xbox Live for the usual $39.99, but I also got a month of Game Pass free. Now, I was trying to work out whether that was a good deal or not. I'm not sure. I'm still not sure, and I didn't take the deal, because in the end they offered me a 12 months for $26.99, so I just went with that.
That is good.
But I don't know. See, I keep looking at Game Pass and then thinking... I don't know if there's enough there yet for me to pull the trigger.
There could be more. I'm not going to lie. But the way I looked at it, Nick, and the reason I subscribed is simply this. If I only play Sea of Thieves, Crackdown and State of Decay 2 this year, let's say that's £100 and I'm not going to... And $8.99 a month, I'm paying a little bit less to get those three games... And there are other games on there, like DMC's on there, like the definitive edition.
The one that you keep saying I need to play.
That's on there.
Okay.
You do have to, like, I don't know that any console does sorting very well, because you do have to really study the form with these things. But I'm not. I don't work for Microsoft. I'm not trying to sell anyone anything. Go and have a look at it yourself and see if there's games that... But that's the way I justified it, that I want to play Sea of Thieves. I definitely, definitely want to play Crackdown. You know, I mean, there's a chance I'll review Crackdown, but that, you know, whatever. And I really want to play State of Decay 2. So I looked at it, that those, and there's no way that they're only going to announce three... They're not going to just release three exclusives this year. They're just not. Well, fucking hell, I hope they're not. You know? But so then they've already said that anything else will be in there. So the way I looked at it, that's value for money for me. That's on you or anyone listening to decide if you feel the same. But I think you want to play all three of those as well, don't you?
Who?
Me.
Yeah, sorry, Nicola, yeah.
I was like, who are you talking to? Definitely Sea of Thieves, definitely State of Decay 2. Crackdown...
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm worried about it, but I still want to play whatever that game is. I want to play what it out of curiosity, if nothing else.
Yeah. Okay. But you've got to think. I feel like the boat sailed a bit of Crackdown.
Oh, it has. It's massive. If they are pinning any hopes on that, then they are woefully misguided. But on top of that, Nick, you've got to think there must be at some point another Gears of War we know will happen.
Oh, I mean,
there has to be a Gears or Halo this year, doesn't there? Or am I wrong?
No, just thinking. I was playing
Gears of War for last night in co-op with the hub, and I was playing it going, oh, I'm about ready for another Gears of War.
Oh, yeah. But am I right in thinking it's been 2 years since, at least 2 years since the last Gears and the last Halo? Is there any possibility they do a Nintendo this year and just go, do you know what? You've been moaning about games. Have the fucking lot. Here's a new Halo. Here's a new Gears. Here's a new Forza.
I mean, they might.
That's worked for Nintendo.
It kind of, with me, right, I kind of think that Xbox needs some new games. It needs some,
it does.
You know, new IP, blah, blah, blah. And then I think, oh, it doesn't need to announce another Gears. It doesn't need to announce another Halo and Forza.
At this point, do you think it's more damaging if they announce they're all this year? Do you think people will just go, for fuck's sake?
Sort of, because I do kind of think, ugh. Do you know? But then I was playing Gears of War 4 last night going, oh, I'm about
it's
ready
good.
For another Gears. I'm
it's good,
ready
Nick.
For another Gears. So I'm just a bit like, I don't know, I kind of feel like that Microsoft needs to not announce these, because I think it just, people roll their eyes and go, oh God, Xbox not got anything original. And yeah, I am sat here thinking I could totally play another Gears and another Halo.
Forza Horizon 4.
Yeah, Forza not so much for me, because as you know, I don't really do the racing game stuff. But I am desperate, really, for Microsoft to just turn around and go, yeah, and look, here we've got some brand new exciting IP. Uh-huh. And I'm just like waiting for that. And yeah, I would still go, yeah, Gears 5, definitely buying that day one.
Do you know the one that fascinates me? I mean, apart from Sea of Thieves, which we talked about last week, and obviously it's not out yet, so we'll talk about it more then, but Rare. I find it incredibly difficult to believe that a studio that big is only working on one game. And I know there's something else. There must be. But I just wonder, because I don't know what it could be, because... You know, for a while, that Microsoft sort of sent them off into the wilderness with Kinect, didn't they? And now, like, I hope Sea of Thieves does. I'm really excited for Sea of Thieves. We talked about this the other week.
Yeah.
I don't know. It will come to E3 at some point. But let's move away from Xbox then towards PlayStation.
Okay.
So, Detroit Become Human, a game I'm not going to bother talking too much about because you're not allowed to like David Cage games in the games industry. But Detroit Become Human is coming out on May the 25th.
Okay.
That's a lot earlier than I thought. I don't know about Chris.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm
you know.
Keener. I like David Cage, all right? So any of you listening that don't agree,
yeah, it's
then
fine, mate.
Whatever. But I think he's great. I've never played Quantum Break. However, you know, Heavy Rain was fantastic.
Now, Quantum Break is not David Cage, by the way.
Oh,
you're thinking of Remedy. That's the Remedy game, the one that Alan Wake won.
Oh, who's David Cage then?
Well, you said you liked him, Chris.
I thought he was... Well, go on.
He's Heavy Rain.
Heavy Rain.
Heavy Rain. No,
all right. Quantic Dream. Quantic Dream is the developer. Quantic Break is the game by Remedy. It's an easy mistake to make, to be completely honest with you.
Fucking
There's
hell.
Too many quantums.
All right.
I mean, what was the TV show?
Chris, have you had a coffee? Have you had a coffee?
I haven't got anything with me. Because we were like... It was like impulsive. I didn't make myself a drink, and I'm just...
This is a rookie mistake.
I've let myself down. I've just let myself down. I feel like a fool. So, you know.
Oh no.
I'm just gonna. I'm just, I'm sad now. But right,
which game was
Heavy?
Yeah, go on.
Heavy Rain, and that one with yes. William Dafoe and Ellen Page.
Beyond Two Souls.
Yeah, that That's was it. David Cage on it.
That was David
yeah.
Cage. Yeah,
yeah. There we go. I like them two games.
Okay,
so I'm very excited to play this. And I, from what like the very first teaser, I thought it looked really interesting. Like there's a lot of kind of options to see how that android would deal with that situation with the little girl. I'm just very excited to see it, and I will definitely play it and definitely enjoy it.
But can we all agree this game is completely doomed, regardless of whether we like it individually or
the
not?
The narrative's already been written, hasn't
it? It's doomed.
It?
Yeah. It's doomed. Doomed.
Yeah.
Doomed.
but that's all right, because Sony have got a franchise that is completely not doomed. Horizon Zero Dawn has crossed 7.6 million sales. That's sold through. So from Herman Hulst, the managing director and co-founder of Guerrilla, he says, "We had huge ambition for Horizon Zero Dawn, and as we approached the launch, we knew people were excited, but to see the sales of this volume is truly mind-blowing. Since launch, millions of players have joined Aloy on a quest to discover the secret of the Old Ones. We hope they enjoy playing Horizon Zero Dawn as much as we enjoyed making it." Well,
We did.
Well, Herman, I would like to say, Herman, please, yourselves and Sony, stop mentioning the game. Because I had forgotten I still have the DLC to play, and now it's gnawing at me like a... I don't know what it's gnawing at me. But yeah, it's 7.6 million.
Can we just say that games with female lead protagonists don't sell very well? Can we just say that?
I mean, can we also remember... Yeah, because like, remember when the Tomb Raider reboot was exclusive to Xbox? No, it wasn't, sorry. It was a sequel that was. But the original Tomb Raider, remember Square said it hadn't sold very well.
Yeah.
And it was like a million or something, and that was not enough or... But they, I don't know. But yeah, Horizon, as if we didn't know a sequel was coming, it's nailed on. Nailed on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sticking with Sony, kind of. Yakuza 6, we talked about Yakuza Kiwami earlier, and Yakuza 6 we talked about last week. So the demo of that, which is the prologue, hit PSN. Oh. People excited.
Oh dear.
So, yeah, somehow the demo... I mean, they did say originally that the demo was going to allow you to continue your progress. I don't think they meant right away, because somehow people managed to unlock the whole game.
It was only on US PSN,
was it?
Wasn't it? And I believe that it has... Even those who did accidentally get the full game...
Yep.
It's now been locked again.
I mean, if it were me, I'd have switched my PS4 to offline mode, unplugged it, and just played. How does this happen?
God knows.
Like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the review embargo for this game yet, but I mean, like, reviews for this will be hitting quite a while before the game is available, because it's April, it's out, isn't it, the game now?
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe this game is... could sell better if it were treated differently. Like, it just feels like, I don't know. It's what a weird thing. What a weird thing. Speaking of weird things, Diablo, the game which would be perfect for Switch. So Blizzard tweeted out, it said sweet dreams, and there's like the demon, Diablo. Like, basically, they tweeted a video of someone turning a little Diablo light on and off. People took that to mean, because there's a Switch, Diablo's coming to Switch. I think I've mentioned the port begging before, and this is interesting, because I think a lot of people publish a story, and fair enough, because like, I guess I can see the leap, 100%. There's a Switch being switched on with Diablo. Diablo's not a new game, why would they do this? But the tweet was meant to be a fun engagement piece. We do not have any plans to announce Diablo for Switch. I don't know. I guess they don't have any plans right now.
Would it work on Switch?
Ah, it'd be perfect for Switch, boom. Nicola. It would be.
I think, but it's like a bit of a co-op thing, and it's rubbish.
Well, it is. You don't have to play
co-op. Multiplayer's rubbish on Switch. It's rhubarb.
I mean, I don't know. I found this really funny, because it's like, I think we've hit peak port begging now, I think, haven't we? Like, everything's like, oh, is that a Switch version? It might be. I mean, it'd be funny if it really was. I don't know. I mean, I'd put it out on Switch if I was Blizzard. I definitely would. Why wouldn't you? If you can. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting... Yeah. It's a funny...
I didn't actually see that. I didn't actually see that tweet. That's funny.
I get it. I get how they've made that leap, but it is a leap. Bethesda. They've announced their E3 28 showcase. There's the word. I've said it. E3. It's been said. It's happening this year. June the 10th is when they're doing their showcase, and they've done their usual little trailer, you know, to show off, you know, tidbits about what might be shown. And there's, you know, the usual stuff you'd expect. Just thought it'd be interesting because...
Elder Scrolls 6, do you think?
I mean, oh, look, I hope so. if it isn't, what else could they possibly port Skyrim to?
Game Boy.
You know, it has... Well... Well... Because there's some Dishonored stuff as well, and I think people are jumping to the conclusions that there'll be a sequel. I think the more likely thing is, if you look at Bethesda's recent history, what they tend to do is they put like a game out, like Dishonored 2, then the next thing they do is like a smaller side thing. Mm. Like, what was it called?
Death of the Outsider.
Yes. I wouldn't be surprised to see Dishonored... That's not the game I mean. The other one. The one that you reviewed. Prey is the game I'm talking about.
Prey has got some stuff coming, hasn't it? Yeah. Or am I making that up?
No, I saw news about something being potentially on the moon.
Yeah, but I saw that as well.
So I've completely messed this story up. What I meant to say was it looks like there's something Prey in there because they've got the little mimic spider thing. Yeah. So I'm guessing what they'll do is they'll put something out like that, won't they? I don't know. I mean, Wolfenstein 2... what did they do? They did Wolfenstein, then they did Wolfenstein The Old Blood, didn't they? So there's the potential they could do Wolfenstein 2, whatever, you know? Yeah, Bethesda, you know, I mean, I don't think we're going to get any more Evil Within. That's a bit too soon.
Showpiece has got to be Elder Scrolls 6, hasn't it?
Fallout? Anything Fallout, well, maybe?
They're still working on the VR, aren't they? So that'll be coming.
No, that's out.
Oh, that's out?
Yeah, but it's only on Vive. Yeah.
Or Rift.
Yeah, it's only on Vive. Okay. And all accounts, so it's maybe, not very well done.
Maybe PS4, because obviously Skyrim's there. But I'm not really asked about Fallout in the minute. I think Elder Scrolls 6. Give it to me. Feed me.
It's probably time, right?
Yeah.
I think so. It's been a fair few years since Skyrim launched. God, how many is it?
7 years.
But what about this? Skyrim 2.
No.
But don't you think that Skyrim is such a name with such a cachet that they would rather call a game Skyrim 2 than they would The Elder Scrolls 6? No. Unless it's The Elder Scrolls 6 Skyrim 2. Oh, I would absolutely get behind that. No. That would be amazing.
I don't want another game in Skyrim. I want to explore somewhere else.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, but will that sell as well? That's the thing. I don't know. I'm being a bit devil's advocate-y. But I don't know. Yeah, Bethesda, always an interesting... I'm trying to think what other games there are. There's got to be another one. I'm sure there's another another franchise I'm forgetting. But I can't quite... Well, Doom. Oh, it's got to be Doom 2, Nick. Doom 2 is time. It's time for Doom 2's announcement to be out and to be out this October. There you go. There's my hot prediction. It's time for Doom 2, isn't it?
Doom
of course it
2.
Is. It's time. It is time. Oh.
Punch harder.
Yes, that's fine. You can call it whatever the hell you want. You can literally call it whatever you want as long as it's Doom 2.
Oh, that'd be exciting.
I've got something else exciting for you to finish up the news
this
week.
This is very exciting, Adam.
Bloody right it is. Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 3 has been potentially leaked by Amazon. Now, we don't normally report on rumours because by the time the podcast goes live, it might be all a load of bollocks. But, so there's a description for an upcoming Plants vs. Zombies comic book releasing in September 2018 mentions the third game. It just mentions it. It says... Paul Tobin returns to write the official comic book bridge between video games PVZ, Garden Warfare 2 and Garden Warfare 3, with Tim Latty returning to deliver artwork. I mean, EA are always pushing new games, aren't they? That's what they're in the business of, sequelizing games. So, I mean, I'm guessing that means that EA's E3 conference is going to show Garden Warfare 3 and Battlefield 5, which is also rumoured.
I'll tell you what, I'd be all over Garden Warfare 3. Garden
Bloody
Warfare
right.
2 was a maze. Loved that game.
Still is. They still add to that game, amazingly.
Yeah, the only reason I don't play it anymore is because none of my friends will play it.
Yep.
And I'm just like a little lonesome person on it, spitting stuff out as a pea shooter.
Also worth mentioning as well, actually, the cheapest way to get two, if you're interested, is to get a year's worth of EA Access, because I looked into this recently. It's $19.99 for a year's worth of EA Access, and Garden Warfare 2 is one of the games you get in the vault. Whereas if you just go on Xbox and buy... If you just go and buy it, it's $34.99, so it's way cheap. Or is it $25? It might be, but still cheaper. And plus, you get all the other Vault games as well. You know, this has got to be real, right?
I hope so.
It's got to be, because EA are going to announce new games. What else are they going to announce? New what game? You know, you can have your FIFAs as usual, but
Mirror's Edge Catalyst 2.
Ugh.
Don't
Yeah.
Don't. Come on.
Is that your... That's not your prediction, is it?
Yeah, for me it is. Because Catalyst was in my game of the year for top five for that year. I fucking adored
it. Was it?
Oh, man. I'd love a new one.
Dragon Age. New Dragon Age.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they're SEA, isn't it?
Oh.
Holy shit. Of course it is. Oh, God.
That'd be good.
Do you know, the more we talk about E3 this year, it could be an absolute monster.
Yep.
This year.
Yep.
B.
Just right. Just Dance 2019. Boom.
Oh.
Give me some of that.
All over
Give
it.
Me some of that.
All
Ubisoft, yeah. Yep. Actually, to be honest, not I don't want to get into the huge E3 discussion yet. The one that interests me the most is Ubisoft because they've said they're not... Well, I don't want to get into too much. There's not... I mean, The Division 2 is potentially a thing, but I don't know. There's a lot of games they've got that they're kind of... Because they've gone games as a service route with Siege and the likes of that, I don't know what... Normally, those games would be getting sequels about now, but I don't think that's going to happen. Mm. So that does mean maybe we'll get my third Rayman game, maybe.
Maybe.
Or maybe not. Anyway, listener correspondence. Chris Hyde at Chris Hyde 83 says, with the Switch being a year old now, what one thing are you looking forward to in year two? P.S. Will this be the year Nintendo delivers on the online? I'm just going to jump in and not even going to give Nicola and Chris a chance to answer that last bit. I'm just going to say no. If you disagree, by all means, speak up. But, you know, Chris, what would be the one thing you are looking forward to in year two?
Pokemon RPG.
Oh.
Because
God Almighty, I've forgotten about that.
They announced it. I'd love to see something like Pokemon on the Switch. Even if it was bloody Sun and Moon, I'd play it. I'd love that game. And the Switch needs Pokemon. And I think the RPG would be, oh God, it would be amazing. I'd absolutely adore it. So that would be my one thing, I think, that I want on the Switch for year two.
I mean, the bar has been set incredibly high. Nicola, can you think of one thing?
See, I'm not as big a Nintendo fan as you guys.
Yeah.
But fair. I'm thinking back to games that I've enjoyed and loved on various Nintendo platforms that I've had. And you know what? Do you remember that Kirby game? Do you know, my mind is not working very well this morning. There was a Kirby game where it was all patchwork quilt.
Oh, Kirby's Canvas. Shit. Yep. Ah, Nicola, what is the name of that game?
I love a little game like that because I adored that.
Bloody hell.
There was two games on the Wii, or three games on the Wii, the two Mario Galaxy games and that Kirby game that none of us
remember. Kirby's Epic Yarn.
Yeah, Kirby's Epic Yarn. I'd love a little game like that.
I forgot about that game.
That game was pure joy for me.
You've made me sad now.
I loved it. Yep. So if they could bring me another cutesy little Kirby game, I'd be made up.
Okay, I'm drawing a blank now because the thing about their first year is that they had such a strong year with like brand new Mario and Zelda and Splatoon and Mario Kart. I guess
there's something else that we haven't thought about, which would give them another strong year too. Super Smash Brothers.
Well, that's gonna happen surely, but I think that would just be the definitive edition like they did with Mario Kart.
Oh, I love a new
wouldn't
one.
It?
I don't know.
Metroid, Pikmin.
Yeah,
possibly. Pikmin. Yeah, Pikmin would be good.
What else is there?
Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Yeah, I'm looking for... Well, yeah, they've got Tropical Freeze you know. What do I want? I'm going to say Punch-Out. I would love a new Punch-Out. Mm. But then they've done ARMS, so I think it would be too close.
Maybe.
So, at Dane Wilkinson 85, Dane Wilkinson says, while we're on that topic, he's following on from what Chris just said. What do you hope to see and what do you expect to see, if different, from Nintendo when they roll out the paid service in September? So this is their Nintendo Online or whatever it's called. What do we think that will be? I love when Nick just sighs because you know exactly what that means.
I just don't know. I just find Nintendo's online service so anti-intuitive that I cannot see what they're going to do to justify it being a paid service. I really don't know. I have no thoughts on it because I just can't see how they're going to get around a completely archaic way that you play online as it is.
I think what I would like to see, what I hope to see, would be them to follow the Game Pass system of, like, here's your online, you pay whatever it is, I think it's like 20 quid a year, I think it's quite cheap, but we're going to give you an open invitation to a library, a Netflix-style library, of our old games, and that would be great. What I expect to see is more akin to the PlayStation Plus rotation in and out of games, like, and it will be like this month Super Mario Brothers 3 and Tetris or something, you know. That's what I expect to see. But I hope to see what, you know, the Netflix style, and I hope they prove me wrong.
Can we just take a little aside here, because I'm not, have we discussed this already on the podcast? The PSN Plus games.
Oh shit, that's news. Yeah,
Bloodborne.
That is, do you know what,
guys?
The thing that I think is even more interesting about that is, apart from the fact that Bloodborne and Ratchet and Clank are amazing games, they also announced that as of, I think it's this time next year, there will be just PS4 games in there. And no, they haven't really said what they're going to be doing instead of that. Like, or will it just be, well, now it's two PS4 games? Because I don't think they can give away six PS4 games every month.
No.
But even if you don't download the PS3 and Vita games, which, let's be honest, none of us do, you will feel like you're getting a less value proposition. So, yeah, weird. But no, yeah, sorry, Bloodborne. That's important. I forgot to put that in news.
Okay, cool. That well, is, I'll remind you.
I will... I know. Oh, well, I do think anyone who wanted to play Bloodborne might have done by now, but...
Amazing. The fact that you've got now Bloodborne... Like, I can now trade in my Bloodborne disc.
True, yeah.
Because I'm going to have Bloodborne.
Be careful with that. Before you get rid of the disc, check your save works. Upload it somewhere safe just in case, because I fell afoul of this.
Really?
Be a little bit careful that it can be funny if it's not the exact same SKU. It thinks it's a save for a different version of the game. So what I would do, if you're going to do that, is get a USB device, plug it into PS4, save your Bloodborne save to it, then download it and try that. And if it doesn't work, at least you've got that save backed up somewhere else.
Well, in fairness, I only really need to do the Tumerian Queen. That's all I've got left, trophy-wise.
Never forgiven me for that, have you?
Well, you know.
No, you're right not to.
Just put it out there.
This is a bit like what game was it? The Horizon, where they mention it, you know, and it upsets me because it just, I don't know what I want from a Bloodborne 2. I just want a reason to be playing it fresh again. Like, I watched a stream of someone completing it in 35 minutes, and it just made me think, oh, Bloodborne.
What a game. Anyway, sorry.
Yes. That is a massive sidetrack. Chris, do you have any thoughts on Switch, or do you want to move on to the next question?
We're going to touch on the library thing. I'm sure when they first announced that they were potentially having like old games in, you would only be able to play them for that month, and then...
I think they did.
Well, if that happens, then they've lost, because I won't get a subscription. Because if they allow the library to be played like, you know, any other, like every other month, like you can with your PS4, the games you download off PS Plus, you can play whenever, as long as you got a subscription. If they were to do that, I'd be all for it. But if they do that, I'd think that's a really poor move. But other than that, no. I'd like the library, and I like to play it whenever I wanted to play it, as long as I had a subscription.
Fair enough. David Ayres underscore says, how's the snow? So we may as well have a quick check-in. It's long gone here. I will say... it's the worst I've ever seen the weather, because what happened here, and I'm very south coast of the UK, so I suspect it will be a very different story to what Nicola and Chris have to say, is that it snowed for one day, and there wasn't a lot of it, but it was enough to cause delays. What happened later that day was the thing. We had ice rain, and we had about 5-6 hours of it, which meant that when you went out the next day, the snow had a layer of ice about 2 centimetres thick on top of it that crumbled under your feet. Yeah, I've never seen anything like this. Like, my entire car was encased in ice, and to the point where if you had been stuck in it, you would have died. Like, it was literally encased in a sheet of ice that then, once you removed the ice, the snow was under it. Never seen anything like it, and it was unbelievably dangerous. I'm guessing, being more up north, you two just had a shitload of the white stuff.
Yeah, we had... We had a lot of snow on the Wednesday, so much so that my son's school was closed. And it was lovely, soft, powdery, beautiful snow that you couldn't make a snowman or snowballs out of because it was just too fluffy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was lovely, soft powder. And it was just a really lovely day. The sun came out. I mean, it snowed heavily. I've not seen it snow like that for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And then the sun came out, sort of afternoonish time, and it was just beautiful. Just snow everywhere, and it was beautiful. And then we woke up Thursday morning, and we'd had another absolute deluge of snow. So much so that, like, I've got a deck in my back garden, that the step up to my deck, it was as deep as that step up to the deck, basically. So it was probably sort of, like, I'd say just above maybe ankle deep. I don't know. It was deep anyway. And it was just a miserable, awful, horrible, cloudy grey, bitterly, bitterly, bitterly cold day. It was awful.
I will say the wind that caused the drifting, I've never known.
It's horrible.
And I spend a lot of time outside, obviously. Yeah. But I've never known wind that. I don't get cold often, but that was.
Oh, it was bitterly cold. I mean, I went out with a dog, and I had a woolly hat on, and it was so cold that the wind was just biting through my woolly hat. It was that cold. Yep. And I got like a farmer, you know, like country bumpkin cheeks. You know, I got windburn on my cheeks and all sorts. I had like really rosy cheeks that were sort of, you know, wind damaged.
Yep.
It was bitterly, bitterly cold. So another day off for my son on Thursday. And then Friday, we were expecting him to go back to school because it sort of started to melt-ish. Uh-huh. It was receding anyway. And we woke up Friday morning and it was just ice. Everywhere. Yeah, no more snow. We hadn't had any more snow since sort of Thursday morning. But it was just ice and bitterly, bitterly cold. And the school made the decision again to close. So he had three snow days.
I mean, my boys had two, and we really didn't have the snow on the Thursday to warrant it. But the trouble is people do... Any excuse, do you know what I mean? I can't make it in, but you live 5 minutes away. Can't make
the
it.
The thing is, the M62 was closed. Like from sort of Ainley Top area, which is just past Huddersfield, over the Pennines, that was closed, and it was just causing carnage everywhere. Because that big section of the M62 was closed, like, you know, there was just traffic going through all sorts of places.
Right.
It was a bit messy up here.
What about Chris? Because you two aren't that far apart, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you're just a bit further south, aren't you, Chris, in Derbyshire?
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, that Thursday, it was just constant all day. I mean, I remember we were chatting, I was telling you I was at work at night, and like all day, it was just getting worse and worse. And I got a phone call from my boss. I was like, oh, maybe we're going to close. And he said, we've heard that about 40 of the shops in the shopping centre have closed early. We're waiting to hear whether security can get in for the centre for us to stay open, because obviously there's no security. Right. We close. So I was like, oh, amazing, amazing. We opened. The security came in. And I went in, and it was the quietest I've seen it. It was just ridiculous. But obviously we've got to stay open because people could still get there, but it was very quiet. But it was horrendous. It was absolutely horrendous. And then getting home at like 1 in the morning wasn't fun.
No.
I can imagine.
But other than that, it's calmed down a lot now. The wind's kind of died. So hopefully
it's melting here now.
I mean, we did have a layer. We did have a bit of snow last night, to be fair. But it was only a little bit because the car was all snowed up afterwards. But I think it's just calming down now, thankfully.
Yeah. Well, at @column_ahern tells us, he sort of tells us and then asks us, moving house is stressful, shit, and such a long process. What was your most stressful ever move? Anyone?
Everyone. Everyone. Yep. The last one, I mean, obviously I'm in the process of moving house now, but the last one, my dad, bless him, he always gives me a hand. We've got this small... kind of in our hallway, we've got like the stairs are in there, and between the stairs and the wall to get into like the living room, that is quite small. So we had a sofa that we had to try and get in, on the stairway, they're like bars like going up it, so it's like, you know, like on the banister. And we were trying to get the sofa into the living room, and one of the sofas got stuck between two of the bars, and he was on the other end, and I was on this end. I could see the bars, And I was shouting at him, and I was like, just telling him, just don't fucking move, like, just calm down. And I was swearing because I was like, this is our new house, and I can hear them cracking, and I was like shitting myself. And then from then on, it just got worse. Like, we went to pick up some sofas from someone, we dropped one of the chairs, and it wasn't a good day. And like, I love my wife to bits, and she knows this, but like, when anyone gives you that, when anyone kind of like, you're in the process of moving somewhere and it's stressful enough, and she's like, oh, you just need to move it a bit here, or oh, what are you doing that for, or what, you're like, oh man, it can split up marriages. It's like that stressful.
It's like that episode of The Simpsons where Marge stops on the freeway and just turns, and Wiggum goes up, knocks on the window, like, excuse me, lady.
Yeah. It was like that. It's tough, but yeah, any move for me is stressful. I hate it. But luckily, I've got a lot to look forward to in a couple of months. So,
Nick, any horrendous moving stories to make Colin feel better?
Well, like Chris says, any move's stressful, isn't it? Yeah, but I always remember one where I was at university and my parents were coming to pick me up to take me home, and I'd been out the night before and was hideously hungover, and I hadn't done any packing at all. And I just remember I had like maybe 4 hours to get my room packed up because it was like end of year. I had to get my room packed up, and I was just panic shoving stuff into black bin liners and all sorts. And it was just really stressful because I knew that my dad would be absolutely furious if I wasn't ready by the time he came. Well, I managed to somehow get myself in a state where it looked like I was packed, and I was still sort of like, you know, kicking stuff under bed so we couldn't see it. And then when he was taking my bags out, shoving more stuff into another bag kind of thing. Yeah, it was a bit stressful. It's a bit stressful. But, you know, that's just one room. Actually moving a whole house is horrific. I mean, we did it 2.5 years ago after being in a house for like 12 years. So you accumulate a lot of shit. A lot of shit. And to be honest, it makes you sort of sit back and take stock and go, do I really need this?
Do I really need these 52 amiibo? I don't know. I don't know that I do. Maybe they just burn the whole lot.
Yeah. So
I think the only one I can remember is when we were a kid and we on the drive up and my dad ran over a pheasant. That's about as much as I can remember. Moving's not good. There's a secret for you. They say it's up there. I forget which way around it is. I remember reading an article that the top two were getting married.
House or something.
Oh, see, I'd heard getting married
stressful.
And moving, but I couldn't remember which way around.
No, the most stressful I always thought was a bereavement, divorce, moving house. They were the top three.
And if you have all three at the same time, yeah.
Yeah,
Karen, I think it's supposed to say Woodland, Woodland, so sort of Wildland. I should have ended on the other question. This is a bit of a downer. Can anything be done about games that are successful but drop the early access tag just to show progress that just hasn't been made? So games like PUBG that still have major issues in gameplay and networking, can they be made responsible in any way? Two-prong, I'd say. One, it's on the service provider. It's on the people who give them the platform to sell their product. And two, it's on the consumer to not buy them. But that's difficult because the specific situation here is that you bought into an early access game, which then maybe someone, right, 1.0, we're official now, we're not early access, so people go, oh, okay, maybe I'll buy it, and it's not. So it's a difficult situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of too many, but I mean, access is a minefield.
Yeah, I suppose if you buy it in early access, you expect it to have these issues. But once it's released, you kind of expect, that's the expectation, that you're buying a game that is fixed and working properly, aren't you? I mean, she says there, the networking, you know, the net code you'd expect to be robust enough. Now, from what I understand, PUBG on PC is just a mod fest of people
who've got aimbots
and all sorts. That's not what I would be expecting to buy a full price game for. But there again, I don't buy a PC, and maybe that's kind of what you expect when you buy a PC game. I don't know.
I don't expect that in any game. I don't care what platform it's on.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a bit more common, isn't it, on PC?
Yeah, it is.
So yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because you buy into a game at early access, you expect all of that. But there is an unspoken sort of agreement that if it is a full retail release post, you know, it's proper, it's not in early access anymore, then it's fixed. But there again, I can think of plenty of games that have released that haven't been anywhere near ready. For example, if you think about Battlefield 4's release was dreadful. The servers weren't ready for that. And I think about Master Chief Collection for Halo.
Oh, God.
That was, like, that took months to fix. So I don't really know. Like you say, it's consumer power, isn't it? Just don't buy it. But there again...
I hold off on everything now. I think I had an experience recently where the kids and I were trying to play some games and every one of them needed updating. Now, I've got new internet now, so it's not such a big deal. It's a bit quicker. It's still not instant. You still got to wait. And it was kind of then that I just decided to put this into my own way of saying that I think basically every game is early access now because no game ships without a patch, which means every game is constantly evolving. It made me start thinking about reviews and how we need to cover games because I'm thinking, you review a game, like, you know, if I were to say pick three games in the last year you've reviewed and just then say how much have they changed since I reviewed them? Like, who reviewed Destiny 2 for us? Was that Mick? You know, if would the review he wrote then still work for someone buying it now?
No.
Brand, exactly. You know, Rainbow Six Siege is another one. I mean, that game nearly needs re-reviewing. I think Stubbsy reviewed that for us, I think.
Yeah.
3 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, it is coming up to the third year. You know, and it is a completely different game.
You know, what other games are there that we can think of? No Man's Sky is a game that was reviewed. Chris reviewed. Does his review that he wrote, 2 years ago, if you were just buying it now, does it work?
No, because there's too much probably stuff added to it.
You know, I mean, you start to get into the weeds a little bit where it's like, well, here's another one, Street Fighter V. Doesn't work. You know, Mario maybe is a game or a story-driven game that is just story, like Night in the Woods perhaps. That still works. But a lot of games now aren't, early access is harsh, but are evolving and in development. They are growing concerns. And it really made me start to think about reviews and how the hell it bothers me that a review I wrote a year ago is not a good consumer guide anymore. Not that they all aren't, but it bothers me that a review I wrote a year ago could be read by someone who's just seen a game on sale and gone, oh, that sounds great. They get it and it's completely different.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, the games are patched and improved, but not always. You know, it's a weird situation. Like, games now are kind of just constantly evolving and developed. And I don't know all you can do, I guess, is go to people you trust and hope that they're on a podcast, on a video, updating a review and telling you. Because if we went back and tried to update all these reviews, we wouldn't be able to review any games this year. Because we definitely, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, unfortunately. It's a great point, Karen. Karan, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, but it's a great point. I don't have an answer. I don't know. Chris, what do you think?
No, I wholeheartedly agree with you.
Well, that was easy. If you have a question for us, you can tweet us at God is a Geek or just email, actually, podcast@godisageek.com. That's a very easy way to get it through to us. And we will answer them, or we'll try and fail like we just did then. We'll try and, it's genuinely an interesting point. Can anything be done? I'm not sure it can. But podcast@godisgeek.com. That's it for a podcast this week. Thank you very much, Nicola and Chris, for being here. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Thank you.
We should have Adam back with us next week and be back up to the full complement of four people. But if you like us and you like this podcast and you want to hear a little bit more of it and you want to hear us talk about TV, movies, music, that sort of thing, we tend to do that in the Patreon-only section, which you won't have heard unless you are a Patreon. But to become one, it's $1 a month and you get every podcast early. That's one a week. And you also get the exclusive extra content. That's patreon.com/godisageek. We also do early videos and written articles and basically the inner workings of what's going on the site. patreon.com/godisageek. $1 a month, that's less than a pound these days. Obviously everywhere else you can find us, go to Google, type God is a Geek, then whatever you want. So godisageek.com, the YouTube channel, the Twitter, the Facebook, Instagram, we use a little bit, the works. We appreciate the support. And obviously if you could review us on iTunes, that would be great. 5 stars, little review, share with your mates, helps our visibility, helps, but you know, you bring our podcast to other people. Why would you want to keep us a secret? Again, Nicola, Chris, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we will speak to you next week or whenever you choose to listen. Bye-bye for now.